Like the conversations you hear on Basic Folk with your favorite roots artists? Then join Back Catalog Listening Party, a weekly podcast where you can dig deeper into their catalog. Top songwriters like Mary Gaucher, Chris Smither, Dar Williams, and Lizzie Ngo join host Mother Banjo and Anthony Earig to talk about their old albums with a live online audience. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and learn about attending live tapings at backcataloglisteningparty.com/join. Oh, hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. And guess who I am? Think about it. Who am I? I'm the host, and I'm Cindy Howes. Thanks for finding us. So happy to have you here. This is going to be great. We had Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin on the podcast about a year ago. It went great. It went so well that we invited them back on. Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin are our guests today. Before we get into that, I want to talk about our newsletter. We talk about newsletters in this episode, actually. What they're for, what we like about them. Basic Folk has a monthly newsletter. You can sign up for it at the link in the show notes or at basicfolk.com. Once a month email that tells you who's coming on Basic Folk, who's been on recently, and also our deepest thoughts and secrets in your inbox once a month. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube at Basic Folk Pod. Follow us there. We are a listener-supported podcast. A lot of what we do is thanks in support of our listeners who contribute $5 or $10 a month, and it really keeps us rolling. You can help us out. Get a Basic Folk beanie. Join by giving $5 a month. Get that beanie. You can find a link in the show notes or basicfolk.com. And thanks. Also, I wanted to mention I am on an episode of the podcast Matt's SoCast Pod, where he is going over my so-called life episodes for the 30th anniversary of my so-called life. I am on the episode So-Called Angels. That is episode number 15. I'm on talking about Juliana Hatfield, who plays a homeless angel. And you can find that wherever you get podcasts. It's called Matt's SoCast Pod. All right, on to the content. Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin have both released new albums in the past year that have knocked us right over. Living Thing is the most recent Anna Tivel record, and Thank God We Left the Garden is Jeffrey Martin's new album. Of all the singer-songwriter interviews and musician conversations we've done over the course of the pod, these two kooks have been a popular pair on this Basic Folk podcast. Their singer-songwriter inspiration, musician life stories, and music career development have been a fascinating journey. Jeffrey being a former high school teacher and Anna spending her formative years intensely playing the fiddle before moving to Portland at the age of 18. In our conversation, Anna and Jeffrey speak to several hot topics like, do you write about your neighbors? How's your physical body at processing stress? And what is the point of your newsletter? We dig right into it in true folk music podcast fashion, and these two are not holding back. If you're looking for some top-notch singer-songwriter advice, music collaboration ideas, and the latest in folk music trends, it remains to be seen whether you will find that here. What you will find are two very deep and thoughtful musicians sharing what goes on in their lives and hearts and in their designated workspaces. Spoiler alert, Anna's office has 5 massive papier-mâché eyeballs, and we talk about it. Okay, let's take a listen to a song from Anna and Jeffrey's new records. First, we will hear a clip of Anna Tivel's disposable camera, and then we will get into Jeffrey Martin's Paper Crown. Both albums, fantastic releases. Hope you check them out if you haven't heard them already, and enjoy this conversation with Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin on Basic Folk.
Oh, backup kit, but you learn how to breathe just by doing it. How to dream until you believe yourself. Taking a picture to pass the time, a disposable camera, sore eyes. You'll be leaning your head in the half light. What a feeling to be alive. An impossible question the heart will ask. You'll stumble around till the walls collapse. A burdened heart on the mirrored glass, looking for something in someone else. And nobody tells it like it is. They say follow the good road and chin up, kid. But you learn how to scream when the train comes in, and you feel a weight like you've never felt. Taking a picture to capture it.
Wake up to the rain in the morning. Wake up from your gold dust dreaming. Stone heavy in your mind. Everything moves in the wind now. Any day everyone is gonna find out that you can't hold the line. It's okay. Everybody feels the same way. Everybody's too afraid to say what they haven't found. And all the answers of the modern age, they're like skipping to the last page. Read the story and lose a race. It's just a paper crown. It's just a paper crown.
Anna Tibble and Jeffrey Martin. How's it going? You guys ready?
We're ready. Yeah, it's going good.
So Portland, Oregon, right? Y'all have been living in this city for a while. Is it okay to say you own a house, you converted your garage into an apartment, you have a little riding shack in your yard, and you rent out your main house? Is that all right to say that?
That's okay to say.
Okay.
That's a real thing, yeah.
It sounds like a good little setup for you, but okay, you got a great setup, great living situation, but how are you feeling about your city these days? Like, how have you seen it change for better or worse since you've been there?
Anna, you want to go on that?
I think it's like losing its zest and getting it back at the same time somehow. It sort of feels like there's like a new wave of creative energy, and some people have moved here that feel really vibrant, and there's like some organizations that are really interested in helping keep artists in the city. And then it also feels like rent and just like people being able to stay here is just like every city getting more and more untenable. And
feels like every city. Like, I get really down about some things about Portland sometimes, like just the cost of living and stuff. And then it seems like everywhere I go, that story is the same, pretty much. you know, especially like coastal cities and stuff. Yeah, it's hard. I don't know. I never know if my perspective about Portland is like ever unbiased enough to be valid. It's like, because some days it just feels, everything feels great, and some days I feel really down on it, and it just depends on who I talk to. But I don't know. I love it. Every time I come back home from tour, I'm glad that we're here still.
Mm. All right, I'm just counting down the days till you come out to this Portland.
Yeah, I like that Portland too.
Give up life on the West Coast. Come on into the vacation land.
Yeah.
The Pine Tree State.
We haven't figured out lobster rolls here, which is a problem. And strange that someone wouldn't have, like, I don't know, tried to make that happen, even in like an ironic West Coast Portland way. But yeah.
Like a lobster roll donut.
It's vegan, okay. And it doesn't have any vowels. It just rolls like RLLS.
All right, neighbors. I've heard you joke a little bit that you wonder what the neighbors think that you are both up to, being musicians and not having like a 9-to-5 commuting job.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, you've said, I think my neighbors are perpetually curious what I'm up to, strange sounds all hours of the night. A few know what I do, others I leave to wonder.
Yeah.
So for me, I love, love, love meeting my neighbors, making friends, creating a connection. Of course, there's like people that you're like, okay, we're not going to be friends. But I just love knowing some people that live close by. How about you? Like, how do you each feel about and connect with neighbors?
I'm just now figuring that out. I think Anna's always been much better at saying hi to people. But I'm like slowly putting a toe in that water and realizing that it feels pretty good. It feels good. It feels good. Like there's a coffee shop down the road now that I've tried to like be a regular there enough that they know my drink and like I can say hi to them, and it stuff like that feels good to me. And I didn't always try and do that, but I definitely have a lot of work to do with neighbors. Like the other day, we were walking the dogs, and this new couple had just moved into the neighborhood, like four houses down from us. They were like moving as we walked by, and I went against every cell in my body and said hello to them. And then it felt really good that like I got that out of the way and didn't have to like feel anxious about it for the next 5 years or something. You know?
Right, because there's an expiration date.
Yeah, yeah.
On making friends with the neighbors.
Yeah,
we have really great neighbor with this little. We live kind of in Southeast Portland, and we have amazing kind of smorgasbord of people who've been here for a long, long time, and people who just moved in, and it's just like great people land. I think everybody's. A little eccentric, I feel, as like we fit right in. And
yeah, I kind of get this. I kind of suspect there's maybe a lot of people in our neighborhood that don't have conventional 9-to-5s, because we all see each other in our sweatpants at 2 in the afternoon every 4 months or something.
Yeah. Have any of your neighbors made it into your songs?
Yes. Too many times.
At least once it made it into Anna's songs, for sure. Yeah.
I definitely had this thought the other day that, like, the four houses on every side of our house, there's at least a song about each of those people. Yeah. And had this thought of, like, oh, man, I'm so glad they don't come to shows or listen to folk music.
Do you think they would be able to know? Did you name any of them? Or, like, are there any giveaways in the song?
Well, yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. I'm subtle, I think.
That's funny. Okay. Staying positive. It is tough to stay positive in this financial, environmental, and political climate. It seems like you have to actively work to stay positive. I mean, that's true for anyone. How have you been approaching and relating to positivity lately?
It's such a funny question in this moment, because for the last like 3 days, Anne and I have been talking about how we're just both in like total shit moods and we cannot find positivity to save our lives. I don't know. I feel like there are things I can do. Like I know that I can stay away from my phone and the computer intentionally, and I can like spend my time on things that make me feel more whole in the world and stuff, and that always helps. But also, like last night, I was trying to write my monthly newsletter that I've failed to do monthly ever, and I was like writing about how I was listening to that old Josh Ritter song called Overnight. I don't know if you know that song, Cindy, but it's like,
what record is it on? I don't think I know it.
It's the Historical Conquests record, I think. It's somewhere on there, and
I don't know it by name.
It's just this like really simple song about like things that happen overnight. Like you go to bed and then you wake up and there's been some like tectonic shift in you, and you can't account for it, or in your partner or something. And just, I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about that. Like, I don't know what controls that piece, because it feels like I can go to bed happy and wake up all twisted, or vice versa. And I wish it was more consistent, but I don't know. Anna, do you know the answer?
I don't know the answer, but I feel like I kind of watch both of us like forgetting and then remembering again how much it helps to just sort of like fill up on things that move us. But it's like really hard to keep a hold of it, or just even speed to slow down and like read for a long time, or watch something really slow and beautiful. And I feel like those things, everything can be really easily fractured. And
yeah, but what do you do when you're reading the thing or trying to watch the like slow good thing, but you hate it because you don't? Like, you're in such a bad mood that you don't even want to try and feel better.
Well, then I hate myself.
That's the hard thing. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
The negativity is a snake that eats its own head.
Its own head, wow. What, Cindy, what do you do?
Well, I was just thinking about this. I was having like, okay, so it's summertime and I love ice cream. Like soft serve ice cream. And I also like, you know, want to be like a healthy person and not eat too much. But, you know, and, you know, some may call it disordered eating, but I was like driving anyways. And I was like, oh, I should get some ice cream. And I was like, no, I cannot get ice cream. And then I pulled into the DQ and I got a freaking blizzard and I was eating it. I was like, I've never been happier in my life. And we keep, Hootie and I keep stopping by like the old kind of like dairy marts that are like, they're like the mom and pop DQs everywhere, and just like getting soft serve. And I'll just like get the waffle cone. I'll just get it.
So that's the key to happiness.
Yeah, and I've been really like branching out on the soft serve flavors, because in Maine I found a couple places that had like mint soft serve and like butterscotch and coffee soft serve, and it's great. I've thought about it earlier today. Like, I can't wait to.
I mean, Anna's like fully obsessed
with soft serve.
Yeah.
Oh, Anna.
Deeply, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have a similar feeling. I've been trying to eat as much ice cream as possible and also swim in the river, whether it has a algae warning or not. As much as possible.
Bacteria be damned.
Yeah.
And who's to say it's not the good bacteria?
Yeah. A little tail isn't going to bother anybody.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I have the next question I had was asking you about like your nervous system, and like, there's been so much stress this year, and I've like, you know, in our personal lives and in the world, like, yeah. I need to go to PT because there's something going on the right side of my back. Mm. It's like seizing up and it's so painful. And I'm wondering, like, as musicians who observe and absorb so much of the world, like, what is your physical state right now, especially like being on tour, being in a car, scrunching yourself down to record in your weird little spaces? Like, yeah. How are your bodies dealing with this stress?
Well, you're really hitting all the marks here, Cindy, with your questions. I just, like a week and a half ago, I threw out my back for the first like serious time in my entire life, I feel like. And
wow.
It was such a, like a moment of like, oh man, like this is real. And
that was the first time it ever happened?
Like that badly, yeah, for sure. It was like, I couldn't move. But ever since that happened, I've been thinking a lot about what you just said. Like, I feel like the general tone that I get from talking to friends and stuff is this kind of baseline level of stress and anxiety that's just like about what's happening or about what could happen or whatever. I don't know. It's kind of the first time I've thought about how like stuff on that scale can affect you in a body level, and it's kind of wild to think about. But I definitely feel like that's true. Like I feel just like a tightness, and it's hard to like take a full breath and fully just like relax out of the moment mm-hmm. and stuff. Yeah, yeah. Especially lately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there's so many ways that we like don't give credit to our bodies for holding things, you know, or it feels woo-woo or something, but it's so real, like a stomach ache from just feeling like really sad or really anxious. And
yeah.
I feel like we've been having a lot of conversations lately about like letting that be true, and also on stage, like the way that you can, like all the wild ways you can use your mind to open your throat, like use your mind to put your shoulders down, or like the way it feels to do a show when you feel really free and really generous and really like present. And then the way it feels when you're sort of like clenching your butt and waiting for you're like kind of waiting for the show to be over so you can relax. And then you feel so sad after the show that you weren't there while it was happening. And that's like all a mind adventure.
Do you catch yourself when you're on stage? You're like, oh, my butt's too tight.
Yeah.
All the time.
I do. Well, it's more in my like shoulders and back. Like sometimes I can get in these weird positions with a guitar on where I realize that I'm like doing the worst thing possible for my posture and everything. And it like really does affect your throat and your voice.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's strange.
I went back and listened to our Basic Folk episode that we did last year, which I was telling Jeffrey the last time I saw him that's like a top 10 episode in our like most listened to episodes.
Awesome.
So great. And it's such a fun conversation. Something I noticed was that, and sorry, Jeffrey, to call you out here. I noticed that Jeffrey would often answer first, take the lead in a lot of places. And I find that in my relationship, I tend to be like the spokesperson and have to like stop myself from answering for my wife. But like in thinking about that, like how do you both relate to bravado and shyness, like individually and within your relationship?
Well, I'll go first. It's funny, Cindy, I listened back to that podcast too, like a little while ago, maybe after you told me that in Maine, and I realized the same thing. Like I answered a lot of those questions you asked before Anna did, and it made me like really self-conscious in the moment listening to it. But I think it's more so because I like in life in general, like I think, Anna, you can totally correct me if I'm way off here, but I feel like you would rather answer second. Like you would prefer it that way. Is that true?
Yeah, I never have. I feel in general, you can tell me if this is true. I feel that I'm a slower animal. like putting my thoughts and my words together. I don't know, you're a pretty slow animal too, but I always feel like there's a lot of space for me and that you're like a brilliant listener, best listener I've ever met in my life. Yeah, but I think about that too, like when am I giving your thoughts more weight or just assuming that you'll fill the space better is something I've been thinking about. And it's nothing to do with, like, you will fill the space well and you will fill it gracefully and not in an egotistical way. Sometimes that's really comforting to me, or I feel like a chaotic wildebeest. It's nice to hear you put your words together well.
Anna's spirit animal, the wildebeest.
tight butt wildebeest.
You can't say spirit animal.
Oh, okay.
You say daemon or kindred.
What is daemon?
It's like an animal that you really relate to, but it's not offensive to indigenous people to use the word daemon.
Is it D-A-E?
I think so, yeah. Oh.
Okay, cool. Daemon.
Sorry to...
No, it's great.
...be uncomfortable about that. Daemon.
That's great. I think if I answer before you, then it gives you more time to, like, think about what you're going to say, too. Because sometimes you tell me you do interviews, like, with people, and you feel like your mouth starts moving before your brain... is moving, and then you ramble on about nonsense that you feel weird about stuff.
That's precisely it. Nail on the head, Jeffrey. I was going to say, sometimes I think maybe it's that I even just like to hear what you have to say more than I like to hear what I have to say. It's not even that I don't trust myself. It's just that I like the way you talk.
I like the way you talk.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's funny to me that you're in the backyard right now and I'm in the house.
I like the way you talk, but I need some. Okay. Here's some terms we can use instead of spirit animal. Okay. This is a good one. Patronus. Maybe not so much Patronus, but reason for living. That's not very good. Kindred spirit. Familiar. Is a good one.
I love familiar.
Yeah, familiar is a good. And then daemon is not on this list, so maybe I'm using it incorrectly. Okay, guys, let's talk about jealousy, okay?
Okay.
All right. It's a good one. Historically, how do you each relate to jealousy? Like, jealousy can especially grow when you are scrolling through social media where you see a peer reach a new milestone, and then that hot pang of jealousy hits. How have you helped each other overcome any negative feelings of envy within your career? It could be like professional envy or creative envy.
I think we're in a constant state of like affecting each other and helping to lure each other back to the... I think we have a fairly similar sense of the core of the work and what makes it feel really real and good, and then what kind of eats that for breakfast, you know? This is why I let you talk first, because now I'm already talking about breakfast.
You're killing it.
but I think that it's sort of like we're always reminding each other, because it's really, we're sort of reminding each other that there's nothing that's happening in the world that seems really cool that also feels very real. yeah, maybe social media and all those things. It's a very noisy world of coolness. But the things that we'd love to reach for kind of live outside of that, but it takes a lot of reminding and reflecting at each other, which is nice. It's so good to have a partner in that, because I feel like Jeffrey could be like trying to wear better and better pants.
I am, actually.
Sorry. Your pants are great.
I think.
How many pairs of pants do you have, Jeffrey?
Oh my God, like one and a half.
Yeah, I don't have very many. It's not the quantity. I'm pretty short on clothes at the moment, but I'm really trying to find some pants that I can like for a long time. But anyway, I think for me, jealousy, it gets tangled up with like a healthy competition, I think. Like when if a friend like writes a song that blows me away and that song is like doing really well in the world or something, people are connecting with it in a real powerful way, like sure, there's always going to be like a small animalistic part of me that's like I wish I had done that, but also there's a really healthy part that's like inspired by that and like makes me want to like open up my own tool bag and see what words and music I can make. And like I always have this problem. I think Anna, maybe you feel the same at shows. Like it could be a show that I love and I still want to leave like 40 minutes into the show because I want to go write.
Oh, I just want to go home and go to sleep.
Not
your shows.
No. Like
not
I want to go write. Like if it's a great show that's really inspiring to me, I always hit this point where it's like, okay, I'm ready to go. And it's long before the show's over because I want to go home and see if I can write something. And I think that sometimes gets tangled up with jealousy. And it's not jealousy. It's just like, it's good to try and outdo each other in the creative space in some ways, you know, instead of like trying to hold this like notion that every single thing is just as valid as every other thing and that everyone gets a trophy and stuff. Like, I want to feel like some competition and some like, yeah, I don't know. I like that fire a little bit.
It always feels like a hunger or something, the way it comes, the way it shows up that feels healthy is like, you know, the feeling so well of like trying to get at something you're trying to say, and then the satisfaction of when you kind of like sit there long enough and work hard enough at it and you feel like you've said something that was like deep in you, and then to see somebody else do that or what they say feels really true to you. Like you can taste it almost. You're like, oh, I gotta go taste that again. It feels so good to hear somebody do it, and you like want it for yourself, and it makes you want to work hard at it.
Yeah.
Is there a word for that? I mean, does that admiration?
Yeah, that's it. Seems like
sounds like a more animalistic type of admiration.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Need a new word. Also, if anyone is listening and is heading to a Jeffrey Martin show, feel free to bring him a pair of pants.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm open to that.
We won't make him reveal his pant size, so you will just have to guess.
How about it's the, okay. If anyone brings you pants at a show, you just, they are on your body that evening, no matter what they are. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to not make that promise, but they can bring me pants.
Nope, too bad. Anna and I have decided. Sounds like a great, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a great opportunity for some amazing social media content.
Well, I'm always on the hunt for that, so that's great.
Jeffrey Martin, bring me pants.
Oh my God.
.com. Okay. Another thing that we were talking about the last time we spoke is music as entertainment. This was brought up when we were speaking about the possibility of you two collaborating, and you were both basically like, yeah, sounds cool, but we don't feel like it. There was also this conversation about protecting your inner thoughts and observation of the world. And this to me kind of seems like an endless discussion for the two of you. Like, so like, what's the latest? How's it going for you these days? Like protecting your gifts and resisting the urge to do a project that might like make you some money or get you some social media followers. But that's like not something that you 100% want to do, like basically like selling out to your own integrity.
Yeah.
What's the latest, guys? Fill us in.
That is the like eternal navigation in this, I think. Not that I don't think either of us have any opportunities to go make some money. no one's buying if we're trying to sell out right now. But it in smaller ways, it's, I think that's the thing that Ann and I talk about the most probably in music related stuff, is just checking in with ourselves and each other about how to like keep focused on this thing that feels so simple, but also so fragile sometimes, especially in the face of like all the noise of the world. And, it's a strange balance, I think, because like for me, I'm always going to the world to find things to write about, but at the same time, I don't want to be a part of the world in a lot of ways, and it feels more fragile than it did in some ways to me when I was younger. Like when I was in my 20s, I felt like I had more of like a blind, like, I didn't need to protect it so hard in me, because also I didn't understand it as well. And now that I understand it a lot better, it feels like a lot more precious to me. And I realize there's just a million things in any day or moment that can compete with it and fracture it. And then it takes time to get back to it once I lose it. But I don't know. I don't know how to like, yeah, I don't know how to, I'm like, as a songwriter, I want to address things that are happening in the moment, societally and whatever, culturally and in myself and stuff. And also, I just don't want to look at it sometimes. Mm. And yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out how to, the more time I feel like we spend doing this thing, and it's like everything is a layer and you're peeling back another layer, and like in yourself and also in your kind of like vision of what songwriting can be and what the way it can connect, or just, and it feels to me like it gets smaller and smaller, like in a really, in a good way, like both yourself, like I don't know if you feel like this, Jeffrey, but I feel a lot like I'm on a songwriting journey, and I'm also like on an internal journey to become smaller and take myself out of the equation more and more. And I can feel the ways that, like the tiny ways I've been able to do that have made me able to like really be in a room with people and like make friends and connect to people better. And I can see how like good that work is and how long far I have to go. And songwriting feels similar, like not thinking of it as this like grandiose, like I can change the world or I can become known thing, but like it gets smaller and smaller and smaller till you're just in like rooms with people sharing a thought and that's it. And then we all die. Yeah. And that it's like, that feels really good, I think.
Yeah.
And also like a journey to kind of hold it more and more that way, because the parts that allow you to do it for a job are pretty noisy, and it can be hard to try to grow and shrink at the same time. Maybe those things are at war constantly.
Mm. Wow.
Cindy, I've been thinking about this. I'd be curious what you think, or what, yeah. I feel like there's, a growing, like among my peers at least, and people my age, there's this growing like feeling of like, I just don't really care about what's happening like in Hollywood or at the Grammys or in DC or in fancy tech world, or it's just like it all feels so fake and mm-hmm. loud. I just feel like I don't, Anna was saying, like everyone I know really wants to just be small and be in their neighborhood and mm-hmm. focus on these like real one-on-one interactions with people and like live a good small life and just like let all the kings kill each other kind of thing. But I don't know. Do you feel that way at all? Do you feel like the things that maybe yeah. you used to be enamored by more are, you're just like, so not.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get sucked back into it really easily. And I'm not an activist in the way that my brain would want me to be. But so I feel that when you say let the kings kill each other, that actually gives me some relief that like, oh, yeah. But also being around Lizzie so much, who is such a powerful force when it comes to insisting on political change in various aspects of life. And also even like, this is funny, like even being on so the last time Lizzie and I spent a decent amount of time together was on the Kiyamo cruise, which is such a weird environment to be in. But Billy Bragg was also there, who is like such an activist, that it kind of like reignited that folk spirit of, you know, doing the right thing and not just like, you know, this is such a, I don't know if it's such a millennial thing to say, but like, I'm so disappointed in the Democrats, but I guess we just got to do whatever they want to do, you know, instead of being like, no, I demand you to, you know, call for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. I demand to have a presidential candidate that I believe in. Yeah. But still, like, thinking about that, it's like, oh, but maybe I'm just, like, too old to, like, I'm like, yes, yes, yeah, yeah, let's do it. But, like, I don't want to call anybody.
Yeah.
You know, like, what I could do, though, is, like, go across the street to my neighbor who's voting for Trump and hang out with him and his wife, and, like, we love them. And
yeah.
We never talk about it.
I think that's... Maybe what I'm realizing more and more now is that might be the more powerful thing of the two options, like make phone calls or go talk to your neighbor who you don't agree with, you know?
Yeah. And it's different because I'm married to a woman, you know, so also there's a lot of Trump people that are not down with that at all.
Yeah.
And not saying that these folks that we are friends with agree with that, because we just simply wouldn't be friends. But, you know, how often do they get to spend time around gay people? Like they might know four, you know, and two of them are me and my wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we've talked about this a lot too, of just how to, like, there's so much, it almost feels like the currency is outrage versus understanding, or like people one-upping each other with hot takes and like wanting to be right more than they want to be together, you know, which is so interesting. And it feels like there's all these different ways and different capacities that people have to come at what they believe in and how they'd like change to happen. And I think so much about, or that I feel like whenever I get a wave of darkness about all of it, I listen to interviews of George Saunders, just read his short stories. And he has this whole ethos that is like, if you can create things that give people like a, they leave reading or listening to that thing feeling really like their humanity is elevated, like they just broaden in their capacity to like sit with somebody and listen, like really listen, not listen for somebody to get done so that they can then prove their point, like hear and then talk and have this like exchange that is a lot less about being right and a lot more about just like being people together, that that's like a really, that's a kind of powerful thing that that is really subtle. And yeah, I feel like there's people that are really great at proving something, and then there's this whole other like underground work of just trying to unveil each other's humanity that, that feels really interesting to me right now. I feel like Jeffrey and I talk about that, about whether like should I say something about this on Instagram, that like none of that ever feels good, I don't think, to either of us, because we're in a permanent state of learning. And we're not experts at, like, I'm not a like political expert, or a, and I don't feel like my yelling is going to make anyone feel more human. And I don't, I think people feel really different about that. And I respect everybody's ways, and I see it work all sorts of ways. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, switching gears, let's talk about newsletters. Jeffrey.
Yeah.
I am embarrassed that before this morning I was not on your mailing list.
Oh, that's okay. You don't need to be embarrassed about that. A lot of people don't know that exists, and to be honest, I've promised about 4,000 more newsletters than I've sent. So.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Anna, I've been on your mailing list for a long time.
Oh, what?
And I know, that's the that's okay. Why.
Well, that changes things.
Owe you a sincere apology. Anna Tivel's newsletters are works of art. There are photos, writings, usually a poem, along with your updates. So for both of you, and I say this without ever having laid eyes upon a Jeffrey Martin newsletter, what is your intention when you send a newsletter? And also, how do you interact with newsletters that you subscribe to?
I love Jeffrey's newsletters. I feel like they're infrequent, but when they do come, I think he stays up for like 2 days straight without sleeping. And just, it's like anything that was wandering around in his mind comes out in this like beautiful mess of words and photography and, oh, yeah, it's like humor and depth and absurdity. It's great.
Thanks, Anna.
Anytime.
Thanks for subscribing to my I've actually been, I think I've been doing one since, I think I started like May 1st. I felt really bad about not doing it monthly, and I did it May and June, and then I've missed July 1st, but I'm going to do it in like a day or two. I've been trying really hard. It just, everything I write is a big turd right now, so I can't, I can't make it happen. But yeah, it just feels like a, well, Anna, you didn't really answer the question why you do your newsletter, but to me, it just feels like a wildly different, like a very free form of just like getting thoughts out, putting like trying to explain some of the aspects of songwriting or working on songs or music or whatever, just like touching on things that I don't get to touch on in song form. Like, and it feels really free. And oftentimes I feel like writing songs after I write a newsletter, like it shakes loose all this stuff in my head. And yeah, but there is definitely no rhyme or reason. There's no like pattern or structure or like, I don't know. Sometimes I forget entirely to mention like where I'm playing and stuff. It's just, yeah, it's all over the place. But
I'm a big fan of things that where you're not trying to convince anybody of anything. There's so many parts of doing music for a job that you're in this permanent state of like, and will you let me come play? And you're trying to convince people. And I think a newsletter, or I do a Patreon or things like that feel a little more just like you're sharing a bit of art and a bit of what you're up to. And it feels, maybe it feels slower.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun to write like that, I think, because it's just like prose. And I think Anne and I both like have a little bit of an itch to write someday beyond songs. And it feels like a little bit of that world.
That's cool. I feel that. Okay. This is a question about asking someone to listen to your girlfriend's music. In a backwards way, I heard Jeffrey's music from Anna. Your manager and everyone's favorite person, Steve Foxberry, suggested I listen to Jeffrey Martin and mentioned that he was Anna's partner. And I'm like, oh, okay, dude, whatever. Yeah, I guess I'll listen to her boyfriend. So obviously, I was wrong. I ate my words and I'm fully bought in, and my entire family is obsessed with Jeffrey Martin. But I want to say that, like, I am not unique in people that have trepidations about listening to like someone's 16-year-old son's record or like listening to your girlfriend's dad's bar band. Usually that kind of suggestion, I don't know if we can all agree, those are not good suggestions. Do you think about that, and how does it impact the way you work to introduce each other's music to people?
Huh.
I often just don't, I don't know if you do this, Jeffrey, but I don't, I often just, people be like, oh, who are you listening to right now or something at the merch table, or I can tell they're hungry for some new music, and I just don't say we're connected to each other at all. I'm like, oh, I love this new Jeffrey Martin album, and then I feel like you just, because I really do, and then you get to pass by the whole weirdness of like, oh, my boyfriend's really great, you should.
I always say my ex-wife, Anna Tivel, like begrudgingly, like, oh, she's my ex, but she's so good, I still have to talk about her music, you know?
Yeah. Wow, that's powerful.
Works pretty well.
Yeah.
No, I do the same, I think, often. And it doesn't feel like deceptive to me to say that. Like, it feels very, like, just, we've always, from day one of being together, we've, like, never, like, we've tried to separate things, or we've been aware of, like, not wanting it to, us to come as a package together all the time. And, like, so it feels really good just to promote Anna's music as an artist I have deep respect for, you know, and the bit about like me getting to spend life with her is just like, that's for me. And, you know, and now for everyone listening to your podcast.
Right. Cat's out of the bag. Okay. I have a couple questions for each of you about your records. So Anna, let's start. And Jeffrey, you can feel free to pipe in whenever you want. As we know you will. Anna, your album Living Thing came out May 31st, your sixth studio full-length album. So this is the deepest collaboration you have done with your longtime friend Shane Leonard. Of the collaboration, you say Shane gave his whole beautiful heart and mind to this record, and I've never had such a freeing and powerful collaborative experience. Yes. And you say we followed the rules of improv, said yes, and tried every idea that percolated. During this process, what did you learn about the power of saying yes, and how does that still show up for you, and how does it make these songs on Living Thing feel different?
I really liked, I mean, it was terrifying, because I'm also really like kind of an internal and quiet human, and Shane's ideas kind of live in a different country than mine do often, and but I think because it was the middle of the pandemic, kind of in that deepest heart of the isolation time. And it was like just to even be in a room with somebody that you trust and love and have them be so enthusiastically having ideas It felt really good to just try things. And I maybe believe in the studio too. There's something about like also just producing the space of a studio and having it stay open and not shut down anybody's creativity that feels really important. Or I'm always kind of learning. I learned it from Shane, I think, where he's really, he doesn't say it out loud, but he's really careful about holding the space for everybody and making it feel like just do what you feel in the moment. And there's no rules and there's no trying to like make set parts and get people to do different things. And you're sort of like trying to create more and more freedom and then see what happens in that space. And I learned that a lot from him. And we maybe tried to do that for each other. And when we just made that one, the two of us, I forget the question. Sorry. I needed Jeffrey to answer.
So like when you got home from making that record, was Jeffrey like, let's get a pet cow? And you're like, yes.
What? Oh, like saying yes to everything, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Did you take advantage of that, Jeffrey? Seems kind of cruel.
No, but it's a lost opportunity, I guess. Damn it.
If you could go back in time, what would you ask Anna to do or get, knowing that she was going to say yes? This is a family podcast.
Literally nothing, like nothing. Cause
come on.
No, because Anna says yes to every like wild idea I've ever had. She says yes, like without hesitation. There's no, yeah. Like I really could, I think, go get a cow right now and she'd be down. It's great.
What should we name it? Should it wear a bell? These are the follow-up questions for Anna.
I think I believe in it a lot of like kind of living that way. And also improv is the thing that I am the most scared of, but I want to live in those roles and somehow never end up in an improv theater.
Let's talk about Giant Eyeballs.
Yeah.
The song Disposable Camera. I don't usually ask questions about music videos being like an audio person, but this video is like too good not to talk about. So Disposable Camera, the music video is a dream of an elderly person. Is it a woman? Elderly woman? She's having a dream of a person with a giant papier-mâché eyeball head. Spoiler alert, it's Anna. There are several eyeballs in this music video. The main one is Anna. I must compliment your dance moves. Very nice. I did not know you were such a dancer. Did you, Jeffrey?
Oh, I knew.
So I want to hear about the eyeballs. Like, it looks like they were created in your house. Like, what do the eyeballs mean? What was the process like making them? How did the dogs react? Do you still have them? Can I have one?
Yes, to all of those questions. Yeah, I think I realized somewhere in the past couple of years that I really have a vivid imagination of the visuals for songs, and I just usually don't have money ever or friends who are good at technology that don't want money to do those things. And so I haven't had, you know, very many chances to just go wild and try things. And yeah, but for that song, I just was like listening to it. And I sort of had this like dream world scenario of people. It's like, the album feels a little surreal and rambunctious and kind of like people getting free and trying to connect to each other better and get and just shake off whatever the stuckness is. And then I thought how much I wanted to just dance freely and how I don't want to do that with my head showing. What can I put over my head to ease that and just be able to just be a weirdo? And yeah. And I made them papier-mâché. I made a bunch of failed eyeballs in the backyard. Yeah.
I think I was on tour when you were making those. And I couldn't believe, like, you sent me pictures of, like, the first one you made, and I just like, couldn't I couldn't believe how good it was and what you were doing, but it turned out so well.
Did the dogs, were they okay with them?
Our one dog ate a lot of paper mache, which is okay. It's pretty much just flour and water and newspaper. And the other dog got a whole bunch of blue paint on his feet and ran over the house before I realized what was happening. They didn't mind.
Were they afraid when you put the eyeball on your head?
I don't know. You can't really see in there.
Oh,
but they weren't
see.
Like barking at you.
They're so funny. They couldn't, like, when they were making the video, they couldn't see shit out of the eye. So they were just like running and dancing and blindly through the woods. It's great.
My favorite is Anna getting into a tiny car and were you actually driving?
I just really slowly in a parking lot because you can't really see. And my friend would yell when it was time to stop.
Oh, so good. Jeffrey met my dog Puddles. I feel like she would have not been okay with that because we have a giant cardboard cutout of Dottie the cat and she can't be in the same room with it. She hates it. She wants it gone. She's very afraid of it. So the eyeballs wouldn't have worked out, but it's such a great video. Okay, Jeffrey Martin. If you're just tuning in, Jeffrey Martin is the son of a pastor. He grew up with religion, the Lord, hymns, church. Your new record is called Thank God We Left the Garden. Right?
It
came out in November 2023. The title, Thank God We Left the Garden. The garden that you referred to is, everyone, the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that was my interpretation of it. But some quotes from Jeffrey about this album title. It's always bothered me how uptight religion gets around the messiness of human nature. The only God I can imagine is one who is overjoyed with the mess. And I can't think of anything that has an ounce of meaning or dimension that doesn't come from failure. That's a good one. How has your approach to messiness and failure evolved? And when did you come to the conclusion that maybe leaving the garden was the first good thing that humanity did?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would say that I've come to that conclusion, like as a...
I think it's like a big thing to even think that because we are... it's so like, if you are a Christian, it's like drilled into your head that like...
Yeah.
We wanted to stay in the garden and we didn't.
Yeah. You know. Totally. I mean, it was the album is definitely like a response to a structure that kind of, or like a story that existed in my head in my earlier life, like that kind of shaped how I saw the world when I was a kid, because I grew up in the church. And like more than the title of the record or any songs on the record being anything conclusive for myself philosophically or theologically or anything, it was just kind of like chasing this idea that being thankful for the mess of everything has always like resonated with me more than the notion of an idea of paradise somewhere else, or even the goal of a paradise or the goal of some sort of perfection. And like, and it seems like the way that everyone lives their lives, no matter what they believe or don't believe, like we all kind of move that way through the world. Like people who are grateful move similarly through the world, no matter what they believe. And it was kind of like that title of the album is kind of like me putting a flag in the ground a little bit for myself and just saying like, I do think this, like, I do think like, I don't know what I think about God. I don't know what I think about religion, but thank God, shit's messy. Beyond that, I don't know.
About this album, you said, I've been chasing this record since my very first recordings. You recorded this hold up in the wintertime in your writing shack. The album is just guitar, voice, and was recorded with two cheap microphones. So what kind of wisdom about your own potential and your abilities did you discover because of these limitations?
It was a great, the whole process was a really good reminder that there's this thing that exists in songs that's like, it transcends all equipment and all studios and all, I don't know, it's just, there's something, and I still can't name it, but I feel like I know it a little better. It's like, it's something that I often lose in a studio setting or in a setting that, like, even like a live show, especially if I'm not careful. It's like a nuance and a subtlety and like a, maybe like a relaxed approach. Like I love this thing Bill Murray said a long time ago about how like everything you do is better if you do it relaxed. Like everything you're expressing, if you're relaxed, then you're like aware of yourself in all these nuanced ways. And it just, it felt really special to make the record that way, where it was just, I could hear every single thing happening in my throat and I could, there was no time constraints. And, it felt like for these songs, at least it didn't matter where they happened. I don't know, as long as I was able to hold on to those things, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Red Station Wagon is a story of transformation and reflects on using derogatory homophobic language and how that was like part of the zeitgeist only just a few years ago. It's so funny to like go back and watch TV shows from like 10 years ago. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You use this language in the song partly to make the narrator's apology more sincere and partly to call out everyone, and you say myself included, who's ever used language like that and hasn't honestly reflected on it since. So this is a question for either as people who observe the world and people who tour around to various different communities in thinking about the evolution of bigotry, how people work to intellectualize it and how it sneaks in society. As someone who wrote a song like Red Station Wagon, and again, this is for both of either of you want to answer, how are you keeping an eye on discrimination against minorities around, like, especially as someone who travels around?
It feels to me that a lot of bigotry in all of its forms is really just like the ugliest, or one of the ugliest, like, expressions of someone who's like desperate to belong somewhere in like bigoted communities who use bigoted language. It's like an easy in. Like, you can, if you're on board to like hate or make fun of whatever that group is hating or making fun of, then you're in the group, and that's like a tribe and an identity. And I think so it is weird to like watch a TV show from 10 or 15 years ago and hear the laugh track around the punchline of like being gay or something. And that's the entirety of the joke, is that somebody was gay or something. When I was working on that song, it kind of felt like we as a society progressed a little bit past that moment, but at the same time, we didn't talk about it. We just progressed. And I think there's a lot of people, maybe everybody, who used language they regret because they wanted to fit into some scene at some point, you know, in school, especially, and growing up and stuff. And it doesn't mean that there's some like innate hatred in them or some deep-seated, like true, like, hatred of the thing that they were talking badly about. I think it often means that they just really, really were insecure and wanted to feel like they belonged somewhere. And I don't know. That's been a wild song to have in the world and to play at shows. And there's been a lot of after-show discussions with people that have been so heartening, especially with like older men. I don't know. I don't want to like hypothesize about why, but it just feels like there's a lot of men in their 50s and older who've come up to me after shows when I've played that song and have shared a story that is really powerful. And it's been wild.
Who's ready for the lightning round?
I forgot about lightning round.
On that note, guys, this is a special lightning round for boyfriend and girlfriends.
Okay.
It is very much like the newlywed game.
Oh, shit.
Where I ask Jeffrey a series of questions about Anna, and then you answer, and then Anna says whether that's true or not. And then vice versa.
Okay.
Good.
You ready?
Luck.
All right, Jeffrey. What is Anna's favorite book?
It's a Toni Morrison book, and I don't know which one.
Do I answer now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Beloved.
Yeah.
What is Anna's favorite ice creams?
Anna only likes ice creams that taste like shit. non-real ice creams that don't resemble anything joyful or flavorful in any way. Made of ground up sand and stuff. I don't know what is in there.
Partially true, although I've been enjoying Dairy Queen quite a lot lately. Which are delicious, real ice creams.
What is on Anna's desk?
Anna's desk is so peaceful. It's like in her little rider trailer thing she has. There's just a few things that... There's like a photo... There's a few books. There's like a little stained glass thing. It's just very... My shack is so full of crap and is messy all the time. And Anna's desk is just like peaceful. And I love hanging out in there.
Sounds true.
It's true. It's just a bunch of books. And stuff.
I guess there are like five giant eyeballs right next to
it. Yeah, there are a lot of books. None of our spaces are very big, so the eyeballs live in my tiny writing trailer.
You're going to have to cross the country with one. This is the last question for Jeffrey. How much gas is in Anna's gas tank?
I don't know. I have no idea. Half a tank?
Like, literally or
literally.
Figuratively? Oh.
Literally. How much gas is in your tank?
I also don't know. I'm sure it's fine.
All right. These are questions for Anna about your boyfriend, Jeffrey. What is Jeffrey's favorite tool?
Oh, wow. He loves functionality. I feel like right now maybe like something to fix a bicycle, the thing that you snap and it makes a line out of chalk, or a coffee maker.
Oh, I do love a chalk line. That's a good answer.
Hand ground coffee beans. I don't know.
I like chalk line. That's great.
Chalk line. Okay, next one. What is Jeffrey's favorite pair of shoes?
The one pair that he has. I feel like he likes a good solid pair of work boots that you can also wear on stage, that you can also wear to hike in, that you can also wear to lounge on the couch, that they just work and they don't go bad.
Yeah. And looking for those pants too.
What is a song Jeffrey knows all the words to? Besides his own.
Whoa, a lot of Dave Matthews. I keep being surprised.
Yeah.
A lot. I feel like you're a deep wealth, especially from your like middle school and high school years. Those things come back around and you still know every single word.
I'm surprised like when Dave Matthews comes on somewhere, how many words I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait to play all sorts of Dave Matthews next time I'm driving you somewhere. This is going to be so fun. Okay. This is the last one. It might be like very easy, but how is Jeffrey taking his coffee?
Oh, a latte with four shots or just, I feel like, just black with a little cream. I guess that defeats the purpose of black, but with a little cream.
Yeah, it's either black or a latte with four shots. That's all it is.
Great. All right, guys, we did it.
Amazing.
How you feeling?
Pretty good. Thanks, Cindy. Thanks for having us.
Great. Yeah. I'm really glad you decided that you would come back again. Let's see if we can make this the eighth most listened to episode of Basic Folk.
Do you remember when we did the last one? Like what time of year it was?
Yeah, I think it was winter time. Oh. It came out on my birthday, which is in February. Okay. So it might have been recorded in January or December.
Cool. Well, yeah, we love chatting with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Cindy.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Alex Stanton composes our music. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for us on the SiriusXM app under Basic Folk. Go to folkalley.com, listen there, or on Folk Alley's mobile app. You can check out our website, basicfolk.com, or you can get them wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, we suggest sharing it with a friend, like perhaps any former high school teachers / preachers' sons that you may know, or of any fiddle players / paper macheers that you may know. Those friends would really enjoy this episode. All right, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. Bye.